The Language of Recession.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Unfortunately, the most common words in my vocabulary have become falling, shrinking, sliding, dropping, losing. I'll probably say them all in the next 5 minutes. This morning, we learned payrolls are still shrinking. 540,000 people have applied for unemployment benefits. That's the highest number since 1992. And the Dow keeps falling. A year ago, it was at 13,000. This morning, it's getting further away from 8,000. So far, the Dow has dropped 139 points to 7,858, almost 2%. The NASDAQ is down 21. The S&P 500 has fallen 17. In Asia today, big losses, 7% in Japan, 4% in Hong Kong, 3% in Europe. The price of oil briefly slid below $50 a barrel this morning, though. The next shoe to drop might be commercial real estate. It's tied to those unemployment numbers I just gave you. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Commercial real estate vacancies are tied to how many employees a business has. Mike Castleman, CEO of real estate research firm Metro Study, he says the rule of thumb is that you'll rent or sell 250 square feet of office space per employee.
When you start witnessing thousands of layoffs, that is going to generate vacancies in office space that will be substantial.
The excess office space could lead to a new wave of defaults on commercial real estate loans. Just like with houses, office building owners will be unable to refinance because of the tight credit market. And it's a fact not overlooked by investors. The value of bonds backed by U.S. commercial real estate loans has sunk for two straight days. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Guess who just applied to become a bank? GMAC, GM's financing arm. This morning, GMAC said it submitted a request to the Fed and has applied to the Treasury for money from the bailout package on the condition that it's allowed to become a bank holding company. GMAC's majority owner is actually the private equity firm Cerberus. Cerberus also owns most of Chrysler. Congress has focused on the car makers this week, but today the testimony shifts to small business. Specifically, are small businesses going to reap any benefit from this $700 billion bailout? Not that we can tell so far. From our entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Small business owners like Brett Wingert haven't been having an easy time of it. He's a former aerospace engineer who went into the fancy tea business a few years ago.
What was difficult before is really impossible now. Even just simple business credit card limits being reduced, home lines of credit are also being shrunk.
Wingert's actually selling lots of tea these days at his two shops in Phoenix, and he was hoping to open a third by Christmas, but that plan's dead in its tracks. Michael Christoph works with folks in much worse shape. His company, Omni Financial, helps business owners pay off their overdue tax liabilities.
Small businesses aren't able to get the financing that they were 6 months ago.
Christoph says, if anything, the credit crunch has gotten worse for small business since the bailout began. One economist I talked to agreed, saying credit is flowing again at the top of the pyramid, with big banks lending to other big banks, but it hasn't trickled down to the little guy economy yet. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, November 20th on Marketplace.org. In this economy, it's all about being safe. Investors don't give a hoot about returns. They're piling into treasury bonds like we haven't seen in decades. This morning, the return on the five-year T-note is less than 2%, the lowest since 1954. And gold is always solid. That's why people are snatching up gold coins. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more on that.
Last year, people bought 38 tons of gold coins in the third quarter alone. This year, that figure jumped to 61 tons. Robert Misch is a coin dealer in Menlo Park, California.
The public's demand for gold coins has increased so much that not only myself, but all of my colleagues have seen their inventories depleted.
The U.S. Mint cannot keep up. The Mint used to fill new orders for gold coins immediately. Now it can take up to 7 weeks.
Gold has no debt against it, cannot go to zero, and throughout history has been a storehouse of value simply because the marketplace has given it that status.
Over the past month, the dollar has strengthened. That's pushed the price of an ounce of gold down $200 from its high last month. But dealers say that's only increased the demand for gold coins. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Tomorrow here in Los Angeles, it's the annual auto show. I'd like to be a fly on the wall at that one. A lot of talk about fuel-efficient cars, I'm sure, but there are serious questions whether U.S. automakers can deliver on that. A solar energy company wants to buy GM's European unit, Opel. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
SolarWorld, a German solar energy company, wants to transform Opel into Europe's first green car company. GM says Opel isn't for sale, despite the $1.25 billion offer. But automotive industry consultant Eric Noble of the Car Lab says it's only a matter of time.
Rather than trying to put the industry through a 12-step process, I think we're more likely to see outsiders come in and simply deliver different product.
Noble says throughout history, innovation has always come from the outside, not from within. But auto analyst John Wolkonowicz with Global Insight says the auto industry is a different beast.
Automotive development, technology development for green vehicles is extremely costly. And it requires a company as large as a GM or a Ford or a Volkswagen to pull it off.
The only problem is none of the automakers have much of a stomach for costly investments right now. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
In Britain, the financial crisis has reignited a debate about the economic benefits of immigration. The government says it wants to make it tougher for foreign workers to come to the UK. But some employers say that would be bad for business. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Mohammed Khalid, please go to the immigration desk.
Another foreign worker arrives at London's Heathrow. 500 a day have been coming to settle here. If that trend continues, the British population could jump over the next two decades by 15% to 70 million people. But Immigration Minister Phil Wooler says he isn't going to let that happen.
We're introducing the biggest shake-up in immigration policy for 45 years, trying to reassure the country who are worried about these speculation about increased population that they don't need to worry.
Britain has run one of the most liberal immigration policies in Europe, but now the government's cracking down, making it tougher to get in. Willis says in hard economic times with rising unemployment, high levels of immigration will only cause trouble. Sir Andrew Green is head of a group called Migration Watch.
If you're on a small island and England is 12 times as crowded as the United States, if you're on a small island, that starts to matter.
He also argues that immigration leads to higher public spending on things like education and healthcare, and that extra cost outweighs the benefits of immigration to the economy. Overall, he says, the national gain from large-scale immigration is minimal.
In the UK, the benefit to the host population is about 0.1% of GDP per year.
But many employers say immigrants are vital, bringing new skills and energy to the workforce and doing jobs that Brits don't want to do. Mukim Ahmed owns a popular chain of Indian restaurants in the UK. He says that even in a downturn when jobs are scarce, he couldn't run his business without immigrants.
English-born staff here don't want to do the dirty works of cleaning and cooking for someone and waiting on someone. So we have to bring in labourers from abroad. We've got no other choice.
Nonetheless, the crackdown is popular with the public. According to one recent poll, more than 70% of Brits want a cut in immigration. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Financial crisis fallout is starting to mess with our heads. The American Psychological Association says 80% of people list the economy as a major source of stress. Marketplace's Sean Cole gets Freudian on us.
Incidentally, said my therapist the other day, some information for you as a journalist. She said every single person she'd seen that week was anxious, like they'd internalized all the economic turmoil and needed to talk about it. And then she said another therapist, Arnes Berger, had mentioned the same thing. So I got in touch with her.
You know, I wouldn't say that every single person I see has been talking about it, but a higher percentage than usual, and yes, across the board.
Meaning all ages, teens to elders.
Usually world events don't get raised, or they just get mentioned, acknowledged, but they're not what people want to talk about in their therapy sessions. The only time that I can remember in the many years that I've practiced that is anything like this was after 9/11.
I checked this out with yet another therapist.
Oh, it's very similar.
Sharon Gordetsky. She says crises like these can cause a kind of societal anxiety disorder.
I think that that's what we saw after 9/11. And then some people experience a slight increase in anxiety, and other people, as we say, spiked.
It depends on where your head's at, really. Often the economy might just be exacerbating other problems. For instance, this one guy was having some anger management issues. So he went in to see David Hollis.
David Hollis, I'm the clinical director at Jewish Family Service.
In Worcester, Mass, and they're talking things over.
And he reported to me that he was feeling more irritability through September.
Turned out the guy had been checking his retirement balance every day. Hollis's advice?
He could choose to not only stop tracking his balance sheet on a daily basis, but he could also choose to not open his monthly 401k statement, for example.
So the guy stopped, and it helped. And that might sound like denial, but Arnes Berger says denial can be healthy.
If we didn't have a little bit of denial, we wouldn't go outside, we wouldn't cross the street, we wouldn't get on planes.
And we certainly wouldn't keep our money in this market, or in a bank. Or even in the mattress, where it would be ruined by the cascade of our anxious tears. In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
We don't have any therapists online, but we do have a place where you can vent. Check it out at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
Here's one definition of hope. A Congolese miner who spends day and night underground trying to strike it rich.
Do I go back home with empty pockets? Going back home supposes to have something to give to my wife so she buys food. So that's why I sleep here.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, another installment of our series Working, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.